We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. We go around the country talking to the people, covering the stories where they're happening. We call it the 2 minute drill, and it's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. My buddy Joe Spiker and his great team, happy to help you out, whether it's commercial or residential roofing. Their estimates, they're always free. Suggestions built on integrity. Let Easton Roofing educate you about every possible roofing solution for your home or business. It's about your specific need. Easton Roofing is an Angie's List Super Service Award winner. You can call them today at 913-257-5426 or see them online at eastonroofing.com. Getting you back to business, getting you back to life faster. That's Easton Roofing. Integrity matters. We start things off in the drill in Atlanta, Georgia. Our man Chris D'Amino is there, 680 The Fan in Atlanta. Chris, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And it's funny, I was going to text you tonight for the 24 hours later. What's the feeling around there? And I'd imagine you had plenty of time to speak to people last evening personally, and I'm sure this afternoon and all day long. So may I ask, 24 hours later or almost 24 hours later, what's the feeling in Kansas City?
Sickening, disgust, can't believe it. It's we certainly did not see this coming. Like we could see a close loss. We didn't see getting humbled the way they were. Not at all.
Yeah, and the idea that, you know, this team has been as good as any, certainly in the last couple of few seasons, at a pulling rear ends, you know, and just saying, okay, look, we're not in a bad place. But last night it didn't feel like that. I'm assuming there have been other games where you said, yeah, that was the problem as a viewer even. You know, I wanted to hold out hope that two-score game, well, this team more than anybody in the NFL right now has got a shot, but it never really felt like that.
It didn't, and I tell you, the thing that we underestimated was, yes, they had offensive line problems throughout the course of the year, but it was Eric Fisher that went down. The Chiefs, over the last 2 years, are 27-1 when he plays and 4-6 when he doesn't. So we did not give enough credibility to how much Eric Fisher going down would mean for the team. So, yeah, disbelief, frustration, but certainly still optimistic because 15 is going to be under center for a long time here. So that helps soften the blow, there's no doubt. Let me ask you about what's going on with the Braves, getting Ozuna re-signed. How much does that pique everyone's interest and make them feel like this is a championship club?
Well, I spoke to Alan Santopoulos the other night when it happened, and we had him officially on the air today. I raised my hand. I didn't want to get caught up in that. You know, Alex, people were saying that you'd never go to 4 years. No, I was saying they'd never go to 4 years, except it fell back. You know, the money meter, think about this. Marcelo Ozuna, now the way they structured it, he's going to make $12 million. And it's not only $12 million, it's $12 million. But you had a guy who was a bona fide MVP candidate, almost a triple crown winner, and he will, on average, at $16 million a year, take a pay cut. And he will this year go from $18 million to $12 million with the year that he just had. So I'm not sure who was in, who was out. I know he wanted to be here. I know the Braves wanted to do it. I didn't think the number was going to work, especially at 4 years. But this was patience. You know, this was slow playing the whole thing. And it really did work because while they didn't set a bar, which was smart with him, they let the market come back. I don't think they thought it was going to even come back to this. But the restructuring of the deal, or the structuring of the deal, is even better than it looks on paper at 4-64. So, yeah, everybody around here is ecstatic. The idea that
isn't this exactly the deal that has the MLBPA scratching their head and saying, what's going on? I mean, how does this happen?
Well, it happens in large part because they couldn't figure out the DH thing. So they can blame themselves. They can kick themselves in the rear end down the street. The idea that nobody really knew was there going to be a DH, I think there would have been a little bit of a better market. But I think the other thing that the MLPA wants to be angry about is that I think all of these teams that wanted to spend money had one bullet. And the Mets shot it with Lindor, even though they were in on Bauer. The Dodgers just shot it with Bauer. Toronto did it with Springer. And I think Phillies did it with Realmuto. I think everybody who was going to shoot a shot and spend big money had already done it. And when Marcelo Ozuna, who I was on a Zoom call with the other day, said, you know, when his agent said it looks like it really could be Tampa, Ozuna said, call the Braves back and get something done because he wanted to be here. Well, again, The guy didn't, in theory, take a pay cut. Average salary, he went from 18 to 16 after the year he just had, and he's not 36. He's 30. Yeah. He's turning 30 years old. It's kind of incredible.
Yeah, it is. It is. And we'll see if there ends up being some conversation about this with the MLBPA. I'm not saying just this deal. I'm just saying in general, three straight years, the overall total payment to players has gone down. And
let me ask you this, though. Don't you think, look, I know what they want to cross, but to me it's a market correction more than anything else. This idea of arbitration, you really can't get away from a bad contract. In free agency, you're allowed to not actually have, or at least look to not have, bad contracts in your books.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, the numbers that the players' agents have been using to beat the teams over the head and inflate their salaries are the numbers that the teams are now using back to not pay them their salaries. So, no, there's, but I'm just saying they're not used to that happening, and so I think there's going to be some friction somewhere along the way between the owners and the players. Tell me. The Hawks are going to honor Sekou Smith by renaming their media center after Sekou Smith. I think this is great. Tragedy. Sekou Smith, 48 years old, father of three, dies because of COVID. Just a horrible, horrible situation. One of the most well-respected and well-liked guys in the media out there. What a great gesture by the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, and every once in a while you worry when teams get it right. And in this case, they did. I can just tell you personally, I've known him for a long time here in this town. He certainly went to the national level, but I used to see him at games a lot. What I kind of liked about him, I liked him as a radio guest, not just the guy, but I thought he was a good guest. I thought he was thoughtful. I thought he was measured. I thought in a world where everybody was trying to scream and get themselves heard, he just had no interest in that. And I think based upon the respect paid by a lot of players and organizations, they realized they might not have known the difference until they had to realize the difference, which was after his passing. But I think the idea that he wasn't a thumper, that he wasn't one of these guys that just said, dig me, look at me, and he just put stuff out there to put it out. He was not a volume guy. He was a guy that was actually looking to really find out if there was something to a story and then find a human element to it. And I think, you know, Pedro Gomez, another situation this weekend. I think there are certain guys that when you see them, you're in a little bit of a better mood. It doesn't feel like a business. You can have a conversation. And at the end of the day, when you don't see somebody for a while after that, there's never that moment where it's a little bit awkward to pick up a conversation the next time you do.
Yeah, and I didn't ever get to know Sekou Smith, but did get to talk to Pedro Gomez at spring training a couple of times. And what a peach of a guy. I agree.
Yep.
He will be missed as well. Let's stay with the Hawks. At least let's stay with their fan base. Tell me what we know about Courtside Karen.
Look, I do know everybody around here was trying to, quote unquote, get her on. What a great guess that would be. Then she went a little bit silent. I don't know if they buried it a little bit. I thought it was comical until it wasn't. You know, as we like to say, think of the children when you start to drop F-bombs all over your Instagram account. But she was a sensation. At least it was a flash across the sky. I don't know if anybody gives six rips about it right now, but I do know for 24 hours it was one of those, hey, let's get her. This could be fun and interesting. And then, of course, the next thing was, what will she be able to parlay this into? Because everybody gets into that. Was that an audition tape that she just got? It was basically a wrestling promo. She got a heel promo at the end of that game and the end of that night. And I'm not so sure it really is as easy as we think it is to parlay into anything more than 12 minutes that you might have just had. But yeah, the fact that it was LeBron. Look, had it been anybody else in the NBA, maybe one or two other guys, but the fact that it was LeBron, and I think that, I don't know if you heard what allegedly he called her husband. Did you hear this one, what supposedly started it?
No, I did not hear that part.
Yeah, he called him an old steroid ass. I mean, supposedly, allegedly. And, you know, at that point, I guess she figured she's going to stick up for her man, and then it turned into what it turned into. So, I don't know.
If you called me Seren, I can't get upset because that's my name. Wouldn't that apply in this situation as well?
Listen, I'm not. I don't know what you're supposed to call a guy in that situation or not. But I do know that she jumped up to defend her man, and then the defending actually went into the night. A little bit of a cooler head prevailing the next day. The Hawks did an investigation, which is just hilarious to me as well. It was funny. And in a town where we're not winning enough, I don't need diversions all the time. I certainly don't want this really hanging over our heads on top of not winning. But there was about 12, 15 minutes where I found myself chuckling at least as to what just happened in the building here in our town.
I think it's quite interesting. Are they like? I guess he pops up at Heat games as well. Is that right? But he's supposedly a Hawks fan. Is that the deal?
Yeah, I don't. You know, look, at the end of the day, supposedly he's got enough money where he could certainly be living in two places at once. But he's been at Hawks games for a while. You know, that's not different. The only thing to me is, and it was like Patrick Mahomes' mom. I think after a certain point, you go, okay, the defending of me is not necessary. And I know that it's sort of an instinct and it's sort of that whole idea of you can't do that, only I can do that. But I'm not so sure that it really ever works out when relatives get involved. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need a mom, a sister. I don't need my husband. I don't need anybody's. It just doesn't seem to have a happy ending when third parties get involved in stuff like this.
But I'll tell you what, that's a different relationship than the one I live in. If I were mouthing off and an NBA player came over and said something to me, my wife would be yelling at me to shut my mouth and quit being a dumbass. And, you know, I would not be – she would not be barking at LeBron. She'd be telling me I'm an idiot and how I embarrass the family.
I know
and,
what would happen, you know. I'm the one getting kicked out. She's sitting there drinking the drinks that come with the $1,500
yes.
court site. There is no doubt in my mind. I'm leaving by myself that evening.
Yeah, I'm walking home. I'm walking home. That's how
I'm
getting home.
No. By the way, is there a chance the door is locked when you get home as well?
Yes. Yes, there is. Yeah. New locks, changed locks. No less. Chris, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Thanks so much, man. Have a great week.
All right, been too long. Hope listen, whatever happens, I certainly know that you guys, next year can't come too soon when you want to try to We felt it around here. When you want to get that taste out of your mouth, the season can't start soon enough.
No doubt. No doubt. All right, buddy. Take care of yourself.
Tulsa, Austin, Oklahoma City.
Mark Rogers, 98.1, the sports animal in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Mark, how are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. I'm just frozen. Other than that, fine.
Yeah, right. How cold is it down there? I know it was 9 degrees when I was out picking up something for lunch today. What do you got down in Okie City?
I feel bad for even saying that. It's probably about 27 here. I mean, but it is. Somehow today they had a 29 car pileup on one bridge. So people don't know how to drive on the ice as well down here as they do in Kansas City, probably.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you probably got more of an ice effect, and we're getting more of a snow, so it's probably not quite as treacherous up here. You might have it a lot rougher than we do, even though we've got the rougher temperatures, at least for driving. You might have it, a lot rougher up there. Let's start with the Oklahoma State Cowboys. 6.5-point dogs against the Jayhawks. First of all, what do we think of the season that's going on? How are the fans embracing Oklahoma State, Cade Cunningham, in a season that they're really playing for nothing?
That was a big win for them on Saturday in one of the ugliest games I've ever seen. It wasn't like there was a bunch of really good defense played in the game, and Texas is an excellent shooting team, especially with those three guards that they have that are good players and have been in the Big 12 for a long time. But they go 5 of 35 from three with good looks, and so hammered OSU on the offensive glass. I think that, you know, to get into the top 25 for the first time since 2015 is – kind of trending in the right direction for Oklahoma State. This would be a big win tonight. I think that I've seen enough lines move, Seren, to know that this one probably the sharps are on KU because of maybe a little fatigue for Oklahoma State, and they'll be depleted tonight. Right. No Moncrief inside. And so I think that this is one where, you know, normally if these teams played 10 times, I think it'd be 5-5. But tonight I think KU's got a pretty good chance to get them.
Yeah, and what's the future for the head coach? Is this, is he delivering well enough that they're going to say, hey, here's a new contract? Like, what's the vibe with the love affair between coach and program?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's been I think just for me watching the team, it's been frustrating to see at times because they are, I mean, even in one game, they can play like a top 10 team and then they can play like a team that's, you know, down there at the bottom of the league. And I think that what you see in the Big 12 this year, Oklahoma's really experienced. Baylor, of course, is really experienced. Texas is more experienced than they've been in a long period of time. And this OSU team is really, really young. And so I think at times they just kind of fall victim to what youth is in college basketball, and they don't have a whole lot of confidence. But we'll see if they can finish strong and Cade Cunningham can start to play a little bit better. He shot 5 of 22 on Saturday. Did make a couple of big ones that won the game for him. But this team has a chance to do some damage, I think.
You mentioned Oklahoma, and of course they had that great streak of just pounding teams in the top 10, three top 10 wins against Kansas, Texas, and Alabama before a tough loss to Texas Tech. They went again against a lowly Iowa State team. Next up, after the Baylor game got postponed, is at West Virginia. How good is this Oklahoma team? Is this, you know, I don't think it's going to be ranked number one at any point during this year with the two teams that are up top, but is it a team that could, you know, make a run towards the Final Four again?
I think there are a bunch of teams after Baylor and Gonzaga that seem to be kind of the same. And I don't know that OU played maybe its best basketball, but this team kind of came out of nowhere to me, Seren. They are really good defensively. They get after you on the perimeter. A lot of different guys can score. They were getting better play inside from Kirk West, but they play hard. And so I think that it's probably, you know, they play together pretty well. And so just in terms of individual talent, it's not the most in the league or close to that, but they really do play well together. I would think that they have a chance to make the Sweet 16. If they made the Final Four, they I think would have some serious breaks. Would have to have some serious breaks, but I think they do have a chance to win a couple of games, and I think they're probably going to be seated in the top, you know, where they got a chance to be favored in a couple of those games.
Yeah, no, Lon Kruger, man, the guy, he can coach basketball. He knows that. Knows how to do that. All right. Oklahoma football, are we satisfied with the recruiting that was done this year? They seem to carry a lot of momentum from the end of the season through the bowl game. 10-11, I think, was around the range that they were coming in on some of the ones I saw. Is that good enough for Oklahoma fans?
I think so. And then, you know, the transfer portal has been pretty good to OU. They lost a couple of kids that I think were dissatisfied with their playing time. And then they've got some guys coming in that I think that they feel will be will help them quite a bit. And so next year, schedule is favorable. They'll have to replace a couple of guys that decided to go to the NFL. Ronnie Perkins is one that really would have helped the defensive line. I mean, he made a huge difference when he got eligible this year. But I think that the feeling is this next season, it might be the year for them to finally get over the hump and win one in the playoffs with the guys they've got coming back. And Lincoln, they got a commitment from a running back out of California that's like a Darren Sproles type. He's 5'8", but he just moves all over the place and is really difficult to tackle. He won't be coming in until after next season. But, just Lincoln Riley continues to bring in great players.
Is the idea that Lincoln Riley is eyeing the NFL, have they faced that down enough times that that's not really a factor anymore, and does it affect recruiting at all?
I think it has. I mean, I think that, yeah, he has it. If he wins a national championship, then somebody might decide, hey, you know, we really got to have this guy. But look at the trend in the NFL. I mean, it's really basically hiring assistants and not paying guys very much. And so I think for Lincoln to leave OU, it's going to take a Matt Rhule type contract, you know, $8 or $9 million. And Lincoln doesn't have the pedigree that Matt Rhule did in the NFL, having coached there and played. So I think that that's not something that we really even talk about down here. I get how nationally it would be a
sure.
A topic, but it's not something that we feel calls in or people worried about too much that he's leaving.
Okay. Mark Rogers in Oklahoma City. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate the time. Have yourself a great week.
All right. Same to you. Talk to you soon, Trent.
Pete Fox, KLOS in Los Angeles, California's next. Pete, how are you, buddy?
All's well, man.
Let's start with Trevor Bauer, the Dodgers, going and getting a Cy Young winner, albeit on, what, five starts, whatever we ended up having last year. But a big contract, but only a three-year commitment. I mean, you know, how can you not like this deal? You get the best years of a guy and don't have any long-term exposure to a bad deal. I would think Dodger fans love this deal.
Yeah, everyone's pretty excited about this. You know, I guess kind of the linchpin that everyone is wondering when it might, you know, be pulled out is Trevor Bauer himself. You know, he's such a wild card and it's kind of all over the place. You don't really know what you're going to get off of the field. You pretty much know what you're going to get on the field, but sometimes the off-the-field stuff gets in the way of the on-the-field stuff. So I think that's kind of the reason they went down this road. But that's, you know, it was very similar to the Mets offer. I think the Mets offered total of about $2 more million. And they even said they've got as far down the road with him that Sandy Alvis had made the comment that I've never been this far in 40 years of doing this and not signed the guy. So that's kind of who Trevor Bauer is, right? He does these weird little things. He, you know, pulls your chain and makes life a little bit difficult on you from time to time. But then, you know, comes out and is if he's your friend, he's your best friend. Like, he's one of those guys that when he's on your team, you're all about him. But when he's on the opponent or your rival, then you hate him, right? So he's just a unique character. The good news is, you know, he's from Santa Clarita, just outside of L.A., so he's a hometown kid, played at UCLA. I think all of that is going to make him maybe a little bit more comfortable and potentially more calm and more, you know, normal and by the book. But, yeah, I mean, from the contract standpoint, it's really kind of a win-win. It could work out very, very beneficially for him, $40-plus million over a couple of years, and then who knows after the third if they decide to keep him. And if it doesn't work out, yeah, it's not the worst contract they've ever signed.
Yeah, it's $40 million in 21, which makes him the highest paid player in 21. Then he bumps up to $45 million, so he'll be the highest paid player in baseball each of those 2 years. And then, of course, year three is $17 million. He has opt-outs after each year. You would presume that with $45 million in the next year and his distaste, he was saying he was talking about signing just one-year deals, being a hired gun every year and signing for the maximum amount of money. This way he gets some security, but he still doesn't have to be anywhere very long. He can opt out after this first year if he thinks he can get better, right? Probably not. And the third year at $17 million is pretty much just if he gets hurt or loses it, okay, he gets $17 million to keep trying to play, to try to get back up to the top of the game. And the Dodgers, like I said, only have the 3 years exposure. He can opt out at any time that he thinks he can get more. The Dodgers were willing to do this. He's willing to do it. I think it's pretty interesting, and we'll see how it ends up working out, who benefits most from it. It could be they both benefit, right? Dodgers win, right, and he's part of a championship team, and then he opts out and signs there or somewhere else for even more money. What's the fear? Anthony Davis, I think, is not going to play tonight. Any worries about Anthony Davis right now?
Not terribly. I mean, it's just that nagging tendonitis, you know, Achilles tendonitis. So it's one of those things where it's nothing major, but they played double overtime against the Pistons. It's kind of been a bugaboo for them this year, having lost to them a week or so ago, and then double overtime lengthy game on Saturday night. So with only one day rest, they kind of felt like this OKC team is okay. they're not terrible. They're also not good. So they felt like they should be able to win without him. As to whether or not they cover, that's a whole other thing, and I've been racking my brain on that for many hours today, Seren. Too many hours trying to figure out if the Lakers can cover 10.5 against the Thunder. Any thoughts?
I would tend to say without him, most people are going to be on the Thunder, so I would take the Lakers, right? I would swim against the stream on this one. So go ahead, go with the Lakers minus the 10.5. But I hate laying points in the NBA. I like either, you know, no more than a 2.5-point favorite or dogs when I play just NBA or college basketball.
Yeah.
I just hate garbage baskets that seem to kill you so much when you're up there at that point.
And they haven't been good. The Lakers have not been good against the spread this year, period. So,
well, because they're about the championship, right? I think they're, and that can be dangerous, as we saw. That's what we thought the Chiefs were doing, not covering games because they were just waiting for the playoffs to flip the switch. And, of course, the switch did not get flipped last night for the Kansas City Chiefs. So we'll see if that's the same thing for the Lakers. But is the tendonitis just a way for them to kind of circumvent, like, okay, he's got this nagging injury, and whenever we need to give him an extra day off, we just cite that, and this is just really about load management?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. They do that a lot. You know, it feels like LeBron is kind of flying in the face of that this year. And who knows if it's because he felt slighted last year with the MVP award. I don't know if that was the bubble year or the year before. I get them all confused at this point. But it feels like LeBron is just going out there guns blazing this year, trying to prove a point. You know, he's not taking a lot of time off. So that being said, when you've got two stars, and one of them's dealing with a nagging injury and the other one's healthy, I think you're going to go out there and give the one, you know, being Anthony Davis, some rest if he needs it. And they, like I said, they should be able to win this game tonight and extend that streak to 5 in a row without him.
I got no problem with unloading Jared Goff and his contract. I think Goff is kind of a jag when it comes to quarterbacks, right? Just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you win with him, not because of him, right? So I have no problem with that. But – And I get to unload that contract, you had to send some picks with him. But really, two firsts and a third, and you get back 33-year-old Matt Stafford, who really has not won anything in the NFL. Like, who should be happy about this trade, the Lions or the Rams?
Well, I think Matthew Stafford is probably the happiest of them all. Because he gets to get out of Detroit and still potentially have a run, you know, at potentially at least making some playoff headway, you know, getting some victories and maybe even winning a Super Bowl. The Rams can keep that defense together. You know, Goff has said all the right things. I'm happy about this. It was, the feeling was mutual, blah, 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 you know, the jilted lover thing. So, you know, he says he's happy to be in Detroit and so forth and so on. I think Stafford has to be the happiest one here because he comes to a situation where he knows the head coach will have his best interest in mind, and he knows how to coach quarterbacks, coach them up, if you will, right? And, you know, think about Jared Goff under Jeff Fisher. It was a disaster. So I think everyone around here is extremely excited about that potential. We know that Matt Stafford is a good quarterback. We don't know if he can be great. And the fact that you've got McVay there helping him feels like, and look, you know, they're all friends because of, what is it? They're buddies, and the wives are friends, and they all know each other. They're off-season fishing buddies, right? So they all get along, and that, I think that does help out a lot when it comes to the nucleus of a football team and you know, playing together and being successful on the field, being successful off the field helps out to your goal of winning. So, you know, from that standpoint, everybody's happy and harmonious and playing together. So, you know, it doesn't feel to me like, oh, hey, this is all we needed now, and now the Rams are going to win a Super Bowl. It feels like it's a step up, but the Ram fans around here are extremely excited. They think this is the final piece to the puzzle, and, you know, they'll be raising the Lombardi Trophy next year. So I'm not quite there yet. I think it's okay. We'll have to wait and see ultimately how it all turns out. But I'm not necessarily, you know, cashing all my chips and buying a Super Bowl winning ticket that for the Rams right now.
It has to be the final piece of the puzzle, right? Because they hate draft picks. Like, they certainly is that they just don't want to be bothered in April when the draft rolls around. Or I mean, they have a formula that first round picks are what, too expensive? Because this is going to be how many years in a row that they're not going to pick a first round? Picking the first round, is it 5 years or 4 years?
It's three or four, yeah, absolutely. I think what it is, Saran, is just ego. I think they feel like, look, we can take somebody who's average and make them great, and then if we can't, we'll just go and spend money. You know, we'll just throw money at the problem, like they did with Ndamukong Suh, that kind of a deal, right? It didn't last very long, didn't really work out all that well, but I think he was on the team that got to the Super Bowl.
He wasn't
there very long, but the fact of the matter is they were like, we'll just go throw money during free agency and grab people like that, and that's how we'll fill in the gaps that we need to fill in, because that's been their MO over the last few years for sure.
Yeah, we'll see if it works out. Interesting, though. But Matt Stafford, big-time arm. Maybe Sean McVay can do the leading because Stafford hasn't been able to win with the Lions. But always loved his talent. We'll see if it translates in Los Angeles. Pete Fox, you always translate into great stuff for us. We appreciate that, man. Stay healthy. Have yourself a great week.
You too, man. Thanks.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He's been a top NFL insider for 15 years.
We'll see how that's received.
Well, it's interesting, too, because this
Hold
is
on
all...
a second.
Adam's on the phone.
Okay.
We'll talk
about
that's how good he is.
Tell
what. He's been honored by Frank Caliendo.
Based on what I've been told, word around the league is many fans struggle understanding what an NFL insider is all about.
He's even been in the movies.
I think he broke his freaking neck.
He's Adam Schefter of ESPN in the program.
Welcome back. You're on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk to ESPN senior NFL insider Adam Schefter. He's brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. He's on our T-Mobile guest line. Adam, how are you, sir?
Hello there, sir, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing well because it's a football game. Bill Grigsby, late great Bill Grigsby, who called Chiefs games for years and years and years. I can always remember driving home from the game and him saying, you know, it's just a game. Don't go home. Don't kick the dog. just relax. The Chiefs will be back. And that's always resonated with me, and I try to have that approach. So I'm doing fine. It was a great season for the Kansas City Chiefs. It just didn't end the way they want. And the game, really, the Super Bowl weekend really was already with COVID, right? An odd weekend. But it certainly had a cloud hanging over it. Let's start right there and address Britt Reed in an accident, a 5-year-old girl, several injured, and a 5-year-old girl injured critically. Number one, thoughts for the young lady, right? For the beautiful 5-year-old girl. Oh, yes. That's hanging on.
And that's the saddest part of this whole thing. I think the Britt Reed situation will resolve itself. Let's see how the toxicology reports come back. I think everybody could have an idea what awaits for him in his future. Look, he admitted to having drinks. He admitted to having Adderall in his system. We'll see, again, what comes back in those reports. There'll be fallout, tremendous fallout. But none of that will change the fact that there's a 5-year-old girl, an adorable 5-year-old girl in the hospital fighting for her life. And we can only hope that she's okay. To see that picture of her on social media yesterday on the GoFundMe page was devastating. And you couldn't look at her and see how adorable she is and not be thinking about her and praying for her. And I know that Britt Reed has consequences that will be coming his way that will be felt for a long time. But that pales in comparison to this little girl fighting for her life, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And very well said, Adam. And I think we're all thinking about her. If you're a prayerful person, I think everyone is praying for her and her family. And it's just a tragedy all around. And it's hard to just say, okay, now let's talk football, right? But that's
But let me say this too, Seren. I think that the fallout of that accident, there's no way to prove the impact it did or didn't have on the Chiefs. There's no way. But you can't tell me, and we talked about this on the ESPN pregame show yesterday out of the gate when we did a segment on Britt Reed and the little girl. Rex Ryan put it best when he said this wasn't a distraction. This was a devastation. And so if you're a team that's dealing with a devastation, which is exactly what that was, how could that not impact you? Just think about it rationally. You've got your head coach, his son involved in a major accident that has potential legal and professional ramifications. He's in the hospital. He's had surgery himself. The little girl is fighting for her life. The head coach has got to preside over all this, watch all this. Now, you could say, okay, Britt Reed is the linebacker's coach, not playing in the game. True. How does that not impact your team a tremendous amount if you're just a human being? And I go and I think of other incidents in the Super Bowl, and I think of Barrett Robbins going AWOL and going to Tijuana, and the Raiders lose. And I think of Eugene Robinson soliciting a prostitute the night before the Super Bowl, and the Falcons lose. And maybe those teams would have lost anyway if those circumstances hadn't happened because the teams they were playing were simply better. And maybe that's the case here. But I don't think you can just say that this situation had no bearing on the game. None. Because there's something that is powerful about the mood, energy, atmosphere that surrounds a team going into a game like that, especially when, as Rex Ryan himself said, it's devastation.
Yeah, I think that's very well put, and I covered that the Raiders Super Bowl you're talking about, and that was it. Just seemed to turn that team upside down in that Super Bowl, and I think clearly this had an effect. Like you said, you know, to what effect does it mean that the Chiefs would have won? No, probably not, because the Bucs had a brilliant game plan. But there's no doubt it had an effect, and will continue to have an effect on Andy Reid. I know he is not commenting. He's making comments that he's basically, listen, there's a process here that has to play out, and you know, I'm going to let that play out.
And by the way, Seren, can you imagine, and I was thinking this all weekend long, what it would be like to be Andy Reid when you are going to get ready to coach in a Super Bowl in one of the biggest games of your life, and your son is having surgery and facing who knows what, depending on the toxicology toxicology reports here and what happens with this girl. Like, there have to be a million emotions. And it's almost as if this game that you've worked for your entire life, and yes, you won the Super Bowl last year, but a game you worked for your entire life, is just so secondary and so incidental compared to the significant other issues that you're dealing with. I can't even imagine what it would have been like to be Andy Reid this weekend to coach in that game. Can't even imagine it.
Yeah, those of us that have kids know how, like, you can be sitting at your job, and if they're just sick or they're facing any kind of, traumatic situation, how your mind will just drift to that, right? And most of us don't have to make split-second decisions every, 45 seconds the way a head coach does. So you lose concentration for 5 or 6 seconds on your side of the ball, and it can wreck what you're trying to do. Yeah, I absolutely can see where it could have been a very big distraction for Andy Reid. And we don't want to take anything, at least I don't want to take anything away from the Bucks.
No, the Bucks played unbelievable. The Chiefs did not play well. And let's be honest, the Chiefs didn't play their best football for much of the year. They seemed to be flirting with losses all year long, close games. We talked about the fact, again, that I think, again, I'm not a better, but no team had covered fewer games than the Chiefs, as great as they are.
Yeah.
Much as they won. So it tells you that they played to their competition more often than you would think they would in a season. And in the end, ultimately, they couldn't keep up with a Buccaneers team that got better and better as the postseason went on and played its best football when it mattered most.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt the Bucs resemble the Chiefs of last year, a team that got itself together coming down the stretch and was playing its best ball. The Chiefs were not. Their best ball was played earlier in the year. So what do we said all last week, look, how this game goes will write what the narrative was. The narrative is the Chiefs were playing with fire all along, and that's going to be accurate because of how this game ended. But did this game maybe expose some weaknesses moving forward? I think one of the big decisions the Chiefs have to make, they've got two tackles that are now over 30 that are both coming off clearly serious injuries. We know the Achilles tendon injury is how serious that is and happening so late. And then Mitchell Schwartz with a back, big guys and back problems are not a good thing. The Chiefs, both those guys are cheaper to cut than keep. But then again, all five guys that started last night for the Chiefs are not signed next year. Now, I know some fans will be like, well, good, because they weren't any good. That replacing seven offensive linemen, I mean, if not him, then who? We always say, like, that's especially when you're strapped against the cap. I mean, does the future maybe not look as bright as people might think because they've got so many question marks on the O-line?
No, the future's still bright, but the city's allowed to feel down and out today and to question things like that. But they still have the best player in the game. They still have the fastest wide receiver in the game. They still have the best tight end in the game. They still have a lot of talent, but they have some holes that they have to address. And you hit it right there. There's nothing more important this offseason for that team than patching up its offensive line, figuring out a direction, and making sure that they protect the future of the franchise with the quarterback. And if the offensive line is not shored up, Patrick's in jeopardy, and if he's in jeopardy, then the team's in jeopardy. So they've got to figure out a way to upgrade the offensive line, get it healthy, get it right, get it better. And if they can do that, I think things will be fine.
Yeah. Are the Bucs, the Chiefs were the betting favorite last night, according to some. Should the Bucs, they've got 38, Chiefs are $17 million over. I mentioned some of the question marks they've got. Bucs are under the cap. Now, they've got a number of guys, Shaq Barrett, JPP. There's a couple other guys that are free agents for them. But
Chris Godwin.
The Bucs, who's that?
Chris Godwin.
Yeah, Chris Godwin. That's right. Chris Godwin over on the offensive side. Should they be the betting favorite? I mean, they did just win and are seemingly in a better cap situation than the Chiefs.
Well, again, betting favorite, it's February 8th, and there's going to be a lot that unfolds this offseason where teams get better, teams get worse, moves are made, players are coming, going. So let's see how that plays out before anointing favorites on February 8th.
Yeah. No doubt that I would make them. You're right with the moves to come. Who will end up being the guy? But I think right now they look like they're in a pretty good spot.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, there's no denying that. But the Chiefs are too. And
yes.
And there's no reason that both those teams shouldn't be back in the postseason next year. And as we see every year, getting to the postseason and advancing in the postseason are two different things. You need a lot of health. You need a lot of breaks. You need a lot of momentum. There's a lot of things that go into that. And it's just so far down the line where teams are going to be making roster moves to get under the cap, to get ahead of the cap, drafting players, free agents. We have no idea who's going to be added to these teams' respective rosters to comment about whether they would or would. Yeah, listen, on paper, the Bucks should be right there again next year. The Chiefs should be right there again next year, and we'll see how it plays out.
All right, two questions because I know you got a busy day today. One more on the Chiefs and then one NFL one. Eric Bieniemy, his contract is up. It was brought up in the Zoom with Andy Reid today, and he was asked, Herbie Tiopia, the star, asked him, hey, what is the future with Eric Bieniemy? And Andy Reid said, well, you know, it's a little early for that. None of us got any sleep. We flew in. We're going to sit down and talk about it. I've said maybe the best thing would be for Eric Bieniemy to get, you know, kind of take the Marvin Lewis path, where Marvin Lewis left the Ravens after not getting jobs, became the DC in DC, defensive coordinator in Washington, D.C., and got the associate head coach title. That maybe a move like that where Eric Bieniemy could call plays would at least take one of the things that people put up as a reason why he doesn't get it. Do you think there's a real chance that Eric Bieniemy would not be with the Chiefs next year?
Well, I think he's back. I think that's what he wants. I think they want him back. I think Andy just doesn't want to make it out to be that right now, but I don't have any indication that he wouldn't be back. Now, will they talk? Could things change? Sure. But I don't have any indication right now that he wouldn't be back next season.
Okay. And then Carson Wentz, your report I saw this morning and saw the discussion, saw you on Get Up on ESPN with Mike Greenberg. And it sounds like he's gone. He's going to go. And it's going to be sooner rather than later, right? Like maybe in the next few days?
Well, it's hard to say exactly when, but I just do think it's coming. And it could be this week, and it could be next week, but I would be really surprised if Carson Wentz were not traded at some point here in the very near future. They're looking for a package of picks similar to what the Lions got back from Matthew Stafford. I don't know if they'll get quite that, but I think they're going to do pretty well, and I do think Wentz will be dealt here.
Since I said I saw it on Get Up, I'll quote the guy's reaction. Pat McAfee said, wait a minute, the Stafford deal, he goes, he's Jared Goff in this deal, right? Like,
yeah,
this isn't
– yeah.
Is that – like, how do you think the rest of the league views Wentz's value?
That's how Pat views it, and I understand Pat's point of view, but the fact of the matter is there are enough teams that have enough interest in Carson Wentz that I believe he's going to generate a package that's better than people are expecting. And when that happens, we'll see where he's traded, what the return is. But I think the return will surprise some people.
All right, Adam, I know we got to get you going. You got a busy day, so we will let you go. Thanks so much for all the great work this year. We appreciate it. Of course, we'll be watching you on ESPN for all the latest breaking stories.
Sarin, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It was nice to talk to Kansas City all year long. And the only thing I could say that would make anyone feel any better, hopefully, would be that the Chiefs will be back. And also, again, to emphasize, our thoughts are with the 5-year-old girl. And we really hope that she's okay. That's the most important issue today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Adam Schefter, ESPN. We'll take a break. Come back. You're in the program.
The Program with Seren Petro.
All right, man. You're the best. Thank you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt. End of the hour answer. These were a lot more fun last year when they were good for the Chiefs. How many teams have been held without a touchdown in a Super Bowl?
Okay, here we go here. Let's see. Somebody, was it the Dolphins that got held without one against the Cowboys?
Yep.
That's one. Football team got one on the Yepremian farce.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another? I'm going to say one.
Three. Well, one of them was last night.
Well, I wasn't counting last night. Yeah, see, you know, if you're going to bounce around, you always, every other time it's before last night.
Yeah, I didn't say it. I said how many teams have been held at a touchdown. The other one happened just a couple years ago. Rams.
And from now on, when you ask a question and you don't specify, when you mean it, but you don't specify before last night, I'm gonna bomb you.
There's no reason to bomb this. How many teams have been held without a touchdown in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to say three, Curtis.
Three.
In the interest of time, I'm going to go with three.
Dolphins, Rams a couple years ago, and the Chiefs last night.
Oh, that's right. Yes. That's not the category. We were wanting to go into the back-to-back and three as a franchise club, not the not scoring a touchdown club.
But how about Tom Brady? Seven wins and two of them have been when the other team didn't score a touchdown.
Because he sucks. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe Brady sucks. A little overrated. Maybe a little fortunate.
Stop talking about him being one of the best. Talk about him being one of the luckiest.
Yeah.
That's where the conversation needs to be. He's not the GOAT. He's the luckiest of all time. The LOAT
he's
is
the
what
loat.
He is.
No, he's the blanking luckiest of all time. He's the float.
Yeah, he's the float. The float. I like that. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we were playing for, thanks to Joe's. Being open yesterday, listen, the game may not have gone the way we wanted at my house, but the food did. Just phenomenal. We crushed it. A rocket pig sandwich, a Z-Man. There was a beef brisket sandwich, the world's best fries, the best onion rings. They don't get enough run for their onion rings. Their onion rings are absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love the rings. And, of course, we had a some short ends for ribs. The ribs don't get enough credit either. The ribs just fall off the bus. So good. Go to Joe's Kansas City Barbecue tonight. You can order online at joeskc.com or with the Joe's app. We will take a break when we come back. We're going to give you the things you need to know. Did you hear Kevin Harlan's latest gem? We will give you a chance to hear that. Some exciting numbers about officiating in the Super Bowl, too. You're going to want to hear those numbers.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, Kansas had been in the AP basketball poll for 231 consecutive weeks. Where did that rank all time? Brought to you by Good Sense.